Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You idiots! You are absolute idiots!
We are not idiots! We want to go home!
I want to sit in a pub and drink a pint of beer again. I want to walk in a park and watch a cricket match. Above all, I want to...
Pull to open!
Yes, and what do you do?
Take no prisoners! Enjoy and rejoice!
You're always in a chase.
Chase, yes, as a matter of fact.
Diggity, I knew I was right!
Here come the drums! Here come the drums, here come the drums.
Hello and welcome to Pull to Open, an ongoing quest to watch all of Doctor Who, the entire television program, in random order. I'm Pete Paschal.
And I'm Chris Taylor, and boy, what a random adventure we have for you today. We have a random adventure within a random adventure. It's random adventures all the way down, young man. And to set this up perfectly, Pete, why don't you catch the listeners up on where we've been so far in our time-space visualizer?
Well, first, Happy New Year. It's the first of the new year. But, you know, the new year doesn't start until you have a reflection on where you've been the previous year, at least the last few weeks. So previously on Pull to Open, hey, guys, we were in the Tennant era with a cute little black hole.
Aw, so cute.
And a delightful Satan.
Yeah, you don't think of these things as being cute, but they were.
We could take refuge in our sanctuary base with all that. Anyway, it was the Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit, where one Ellie Blackwood came and helped us with a bit of a commentary on that. That was good times. And then the randomizer got very much into the spirit of the season, taking us to the Matt Smith Christmas special, A Christmas Carol. And man, were there some moral quandaries in that one.
Yep. And then I asked for less moral quandaries, and possibly the biggest moral quandary certainly in our adventure so far.
Yeah, as I recall, you asked for something very light, something mm-hmm. you could just turn your brain off, and mm-hmm. we got the adventure that might be the polar opposite of that spirit, which was Demons of the Punjab.
Yes.
Very well-remembered Jodie Whittaker episode, which took on the weighty topic of the Indian partition.
That's right, which sent me scurrying into History Corner, where I stayed with piles of books for a week trying to figure out the real story behind partition and discovered that the show actually did a pretty good job. So go listen to our episode on that.
Yeah, please do. And actually, if you already listened to it, go ahead and you might want to listen to it again, because there was an extended History Corner that has now been restored in the audio version on the podcast. But on YouTube, you can listen to the entire History Corner in a separate video. It was so huge, it didn't initially fit into our TARDIS. It was just so dimensionally transcendental, this podcast.
Yeah.
We got the entire thing on YouTube and in our podcast.
Definitely. Definitely a History Corner that's bigger on the inside. My goodness, what a bigger on the inside topic partition was. Now, that was last time. It doesn't feel like last time because we've done so many hot takes on the specials, which kind of intersected with everything that we were doing randomly in a timey-wimey way. But there is a random journey, and the randomizer must be paid heed to. And after Demons of the Punjab, it took us somewhere that is, it was the little adventure that we were looking for.
Yeah, it basically was finally responding to you and saying, like, let's do something light, something that, you know, doesn't have a lot of thinking involved. And it's like let's take these guys to season 2, serial 8, The Chase.
Dun, dun, dun. Yes, The Chase, a.k.a. The Daleks 3. As it was originally known, it was Terry Nation's third opportunity to reuse his Dalek tropes. And it is one, though, so we haven't been to the one before it, which is the Space Museum. We have been to the one after it, which is the Time Meddler. So we saw Stephen Taylor's first proper adventure in the TARDIS. And now we got to go back and see how he got there in the first place and what happened with Ian and Barbara. And I've got to say that the randomizer does love Hartnell. I think we may be at the stage where we've done more Hartnell stories than any other Doctor. Is that true? Is he beating Capaldi at this point?
He might be. You know, I don't know, I haven't done the inventory of this, but it feels like we've done tons of Hartnell. It's the randomizer definitely has its preferences of Doctors, and you might have to do some kind of analysis. So it seems to love Hartnell, Pertwee, a little bit Tom Baker. It seemed like it was into Davison at first, but then sort of got cold on him. Capaldi, and now recently Tennant, you know, and that's kind of it. I mean, yeah, we kind of cheated a little bit by doing a good chunk of Jodie Whittaker's second season early on, non-randomly. But it is definitely neglected Troughton and McCoy. Those are the ones it's really not completely avoided, but avoided throughout. So,
yeah.
But Hartnell, yeah, we're filling it in pretty quickly at a nice pace.
And it seems to particularly like the TARDIS team, the combination of Ian and Barbara and Vicky and the Doctor. Yep. It's kind of the randomizer sweet spot. And, of course, this is bittersweet because it is the last of Ian and Barbara. It is.
Spoiler.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's all good. We're in season 5 at Pull to Open now. I think we can pretty much assume the folks are not watching along. Or if you are, that's great. Let us know, because we'd love to hear from you. But guys, we're going to get to the commentary on the chase in just a little bit. But I want to kick things off today with our first show of the new year with a little bit of a note of what's going to happen and Pull to Open this year. So it's 2024. It's time to make some resolutions. It's time for a fresh coat of paint and new approaches to things. And here's what is going to change around here on Pull to Open. First of all, we're going to make our introductions, which, yes, we've heard loud and clear throughout the months and years that sometimes we go on a bit in our intros. We're going to tighten that up. It doesn't mean that it's going to go away entirely, but we are going to get to our commentaries quicker going forward. So what that means is a couple of things that you might have heard early on might be scattered throughout. So we're shaking up the format a bit.
Yeah. Still doing the things you love, the TLDW, the Humoji Challenge that's coming up. We're going to get to a lot of them quicker, basically. We're going to get into it more quickly. We will still remind you about reviews and all of the social networks that you can find us on. That's definitely a way that we are different from other Talk To podcasts. You can find us literally everywhere, every corner of the World Wide Web. We have sent our TARDIS to in advance. If you find a new social media planet and we're not on it, please let us know, because we like to be everywhere. But we'll remind you of that throughout. We'll get into the podcast more quickly. And we have an exciting new tier of the Pull to Open experience, an actual Pull to Open membership.
Exactly. So as everyone who has listened to the podcast before knows, right around now, we'd probably be telling you that we have a YouTube channel. Hey, we have a YouTube channel, but I'm not bringing it up just to say that. It's at youtube.com/pulltoopen. There is now a membership program on the YouTube channel. So you can, if you want to become a supporter of the podcast, you can go to YouTube and become a supporter for the low, low price of $7.99 satsumas a month, or dollars we also accept. And now it's not just, you know, hey, you're supporting content that you love, which I hope you do, but you will also, as a member, be entitled to get the podcast a day early. That's right. Usually our podcast post very early on Saturday mornings, New York time, and you will be able to get it a whole 24 hours earlier on the Friday before. So, you know, you can queue it up for the weekend. You could brag to all the other Pull to Open fans, hey, I already listened to the thing that isn't even available yet on a Friday. So that'll be good times.
Yeah, looking forward to creating a whole class of Pull to Open hipster there. But yeah, $7.99 a month, that's cheaper than a fun fair in Ghana. in 1996. It's cheaper than Twitter, or what used to be known as Twitter, cheaper than the premium membership there. And yeah, the podcast day early. You get to brag about that. You get to be in advance on our timey-wimey journey. You get to be just a little bit ahead of the Daleks.
And I know we've, in the past, and we still do, we have a Patreon where you can also support the podcast as well as a Substack. You can still do so in both of those places. And if you've already become a contributor to the podcast or a patron, don't worry about the YouTube thing. We're going to make sure that you will find a way to get you into that early access membership as well. So don't worry if you're like, hey, I already showed my support. We know. We're going to make sure you're a member. So all good things. We definitely want to be more active on social media. So if keep engaging with us there, we'll keep engaging back. We'll reply. You'll probably see more stuff from us during the week. It's feast or famine sometimes with us, but it's one of our goals to make sure our social media is just a little more active. So whether you follow us on X, on Threads, on Blue Sky, on TikTok, on Instagram and all the other places. I'm probably skipping two or three.
All the ones we're forgetting. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll be on top of it. So keep replying, keep on chatting, and we will be talking to you.
Yeah. We do want this to be an interactive podcast. We don't want to just talk at you. We want to talk with you. We want to know what you think of the episode. You can tell us in poll to open on Spotify. We'll get to that. But first of all, one of the biggest contributions you can make is to give us a Doctor Who title from the history of the show in the form of emoji. And we will then use that. That will be in the Codex forever. But also, it will be used in the next segment coming up. Pete, what is it?
The Humoji Challenge. That's right, folks. These are all listener-contributed emojis, Humojis. And we have one today that I've already revealed to Chris before the show is very apt. I won't say why it's apt because that would be a massive giveaway, but it's a very apt emoji challenge. I also think it's actually quite difficult, but we'll see.
Oh boy.
Last time I said that, you guys got it right away.
And also last time you said it was easy, let us forget. And I still let us forget. I still have not gotten over the curse of the black spot.
Should old emojis be forgot?
Yes, they should.
Don't forget this one, and it is four emojis.
Oh, boy.
All right. First emoji. Ambulance.
Okay.
Second emoji. Motorcycle.
Okay.
Third emoji. X-ray. Chest X-ray.
Okay.
Fourth emoji, a clock with the hands at midnight.
I'm
going to drop this in the chat for you. One second.
Yes, please. So the motorcycle makes me, and the ambulance both make me think of Bells of St. John's.
Good guess, but wrong.
Okay. Where else is there a motorcycle? There's a motorcycle in Day of the Doctor.
Good guess, but wrong.
I'm not getting the chest x-ray. Ooh, maybe this is a reference to the Doctor Who movie.
It's the movie!
Oh, thank goodness.
Right? Did you start thinking about the ambulance? You did exactly what I did when I first
went
through this. And I actually even included Smith and Jones, even though I don't think there was an ambulance whenever I look at medical stuff. I think of that one because Martha is a doctor. They're in a hospital. That always sort of screws me up. But the midnight thing here gives it away.
Right. That is when the doctor regenerates. Yes.
Right. Well, it's when it's like the world is going to get pulled apart at midnight.
Oh, yeah.
New Year's Eve, which...
Oh, hey!
Hello, future listener. We actually recording this on New Year's Eve.
Hey!
Which is why it was apt. So there you go.
Fabulous. I love it. Fantastic. And so apt for the chase as well, because of course the Doctor Who movie, when he regenerates, there's that they're watching a Frankenstein movie. Frankenstein's monster. Like, it's a deliberate reference to that scene. We have that in the chase as well. So
didn't even think of that. Dead on. Wow. Look at this.
Even
Thank
more
you
apt.
Very much, Bob Gilby, who had no idea how apt his emoji challenge was. Bob, thanks so much for all the emojis you've submitted lately. You too can submit a emoji, as Chris said. We would love that if you could do it in the form of a review. So the Apple Podcast app, of course, allows you to submit reviews. Please leave a review in the form of a Doctor Who title as an emoji, and we will still accept them from other places, but this is really the main way we want to get you submitting emojis. So it's kind of, you know, if you, it's also a thing we would just like, you know, a big push on reviews. If you could review the podcast and leave a emoji, that would be amazing, and you will go to the top of the list of our submitted emojis.
Yes, and please submit an emoji for any doctor other than Paul McGann. that square has been taken, but literally any other doctor you can add. Even if you want to do Shuji Gatwa, you want to do the church on Ruby Road, do it. We can add that. That's in the codex.
I can already picture that in the front of me. Come on, guys, someone submit that.
Yeah, that'll be an easy one. And you know what? I will have forgotten by next week that I even suggested that. So you can totally take advantage of short-term memory loss and do an easy emoji challenge in the form of a review.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Another way to interact with the show is on Spotify, where we have a poll. We have a poll, that's right. If you're watching or listening to this on Spotify, go to the bottom of the screen, pull from the bottom of the screen. There'll be a poll asking you what you thought of the chase. You don't necessarily have to answer that yet. You can wait till the end of the show. You can do it now if you're fans of the chase or haters of the chase. But you can do it for any single one of our stories. None of our polls have actually closed yet. So literally just go through our entire canon, vote in everything. We know that you love spreadsheets. We know you love to rank. We know you love to vote. And we have some results. We read out the results with a couple of weeks delay to give you time to vote on them. And these are preliminary results. I think the polls last for roughly 2,000 years. 2,000 days is how long these polls last. So plenty of time.
Yeah.
And we have some ratings for A Christmas Carol. Were the people generous to A Christmas Carol? Did they give it a lump of coal?
They were generous. Yes, it is an official Dalek in our poll results so far, with more than half, roughly 53% of the votes getting a Dalek. That's awesome. That's the rating we give to a good episode of Doctor Who. And a good chunk of voters also picked the best of the best rating, the Viscount Banger. And that's almost 30%. So I think our instincts, where both of us independently gravitated to the Banger Dalek hybrid.
Yeah.
That has been confirmed by our listeners.
That's right. We
nice work agreeing with us, everyone.
Agreeing-ish. Like, if the Banger and the Dalek were equal, I would say we agreed. 17.6% of you gave it a Professor Hater, which means you don't think it worked, but at least they tried something new. Nobody said Ogre on Fixed Point in Time or Lady Cassandra, our other ratings. But yeah, we asked for a Banger Dalek hybrid on our Christmas list. You gave it to us, sort of, or as near as you could manage. Perhaps you're a little cooler on the Banger side, but that's all good. It's kind of a Christmas miracle. Please, yeah, go back and continue to vote. Yeah, in fact, I think I'll be doing that now.
To stay true to the resolution we just made, tighten things up, and cut right to the chase, as it were.
Hey!
And we are going to kick this off with what we always do, Something that's definitely never changing is the TLDW, the great seat of the pants fun that we have, where one of us summarizes the plot of the episode in question in record time. And that kicking off the year is, of course, Chris Taylor in this very not enviable position, because there's a lot going on here. I mean, how meaningful it is arguable, but there's many, many stops that are made.
You know what? There are so many rabbit holes here where you the best thing you can do with the TLDW is remember you're not actually doing a commentary. You shouldn't use the words "for some reason." that's definitely
very precious airtime.
Exactly. But you know, your nerd heart can't not do it. For some reason, they're in Haunted House. Sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself there. But yes, we allot 30 seconds per Classic Who episode. The Chase has six, count them, six episodes.
I've counted.
Yes. Have I counted? Wow. So, okay. I'm shutting down my time-space visualizer so that there are no spoilers on this. I'm going to fly blind, just like the Doctor. In the machine that he invented for some reason, apparently. Yep.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ready or not, time is in hot pursuit of you in the official pull to open summary of The Chase in 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, so the Doctor, Vicky, Ian, and Barbara, after the Space Museum, they've got this time-space visualizer thing. The Doctor's setting it up, and they watch TV. They watch Abraham Lincoln. They watch Queen Elizabeth I and Shakespeare, and then they dance to the Beatles. It's the Beatles playing Ticket to Ride. And then they land on a planet called Aridius, and they go out, and it's just sand, and they wander around, and of course they get separated, but there's something on the time-space visualizer. What is it? The Daleks? Daleks have arrived there ahead of them because the time-space visualizer thing is in the past. So the Daleks are already there. And the separated companions, they all basically interact with the Aridians, and they've got this problem with the some beast that's infiltrating them. The Daleks tell them to hand over the interlopers, and so they are going to hand them over. But the Doctor and Ian trick them, and they throw coats over the Daleks' eye stalks, and they get off. They go escape in the TARDIS, and they escape to New York, the Empire State Building in 1966, and they encounter a guy from Alabama there, and then the Daleks chase them. They're just behind them, and then they go to the Mary Celeste, the ship, and the Daleks turn out to be the reason why everyone flees the Mary Celeste and jumps in the water, and they take off again. They land somewhere that the Doctor thinks they're inside the human mind, because there's like a very cliched Dracula and a very cliched Frankenstein. But no, it turns off when the TARDIS takes off again after Frankenstein's destroyed one of the Daleks that this is actually a funfair in Ghana in 1996. And they take off again, but Vicky ends up in the Dalek ship. Oh no, what's happened? But she sees that they've got a robot of the Doctor that's basically going to infiltrate and replace the Doctor somehow. But meanwhile, the TARDIS land on Mechanus. And this is where they choose the final stand, because there's a corridor.
2 minutes.
And they decide to take a stand against the Daleks then. And Vicky is back with them, and she thinks that the Doctor is the robot, and she's super confused. And there's a really confusing thing where the Doctor and the robot fight, and Ian almost kills the actual Doctor with a rock, but no, they kill the robot instead. And so that's done, and then they find the actual mechanoids, and Stephen Taylor is there. He's been captured, and they escape. They get up and down
30.
Down a rope, and they and Vicky's afraid of heights, but the city explodes. They basically set fire to the city, and they trap the Daleks in it. And Ian and Barbara use the TARDIS, the Dalek TARDIS, to go back to London, 1965, and the Doctor's really sad about it, but they watch them on a time-space fertilizer, and he and Vicky say goodbye, and off they go into the time vortex, not even being aware that Stephen Taylor is on the chip.
And time. Nice work. Wow, right on time. That was great.
Oh,
good job.
Thank you. I blame myself for A, not remembering what the Maya beasts were called, and B, no mention of hi-fi. No mention of Stephen Taylor's panda.
Oh, yeah. He went back for the panda. That's okay. So I was really worried because you were like getting into what they were watching in the time of this space visualizer there. But then you really remarkably like were right on time in terms of getting out of Iridius at like the 1 minute mark. And you got all the stuff in the right order.
Yeah,
like, which was that's a miracle right there. Like, you know, first they end up, where did they go? The Empire State Building, then the Mary Celeste, and then the Funfair.
Yes,
and then Mechanus. That's how it goes.
You know, I will say that. So I've not watched the chase before. I know that you have. Like, we're coming at this from very different perspectives. But what I did do was in Doctor Who magazine in the early years, they decided to do a series where they would just literally list every time that the TARDIS took off and landed. And you know,
that sounds like the Wilderness Years Doctor Who magazine,
doesn't it? Right? I mean, the show was still actually on, but they were already doing this sort of stuff. But obviously, there's a lot from the chase there. Like, you get more from the chase in a list like that than you do from almost any other story, because there's so much taking off and landing. And we'll get to it. But maybe that's the first reason why the randomizer takes us here. It knows. It listened to me those many years ago, and I said I like stories where the TARDIS isn't just some forgotten plot device. It's actually front and center and used. I mean, you can see with all the TARDISes around me how much I love the TARDIS. And oh boy, this is definitely a be careful what you wish for kind of story with the TARDIS. So yeah, I feel like I was primed to remember the order of everything is what I'm saying.
So yeah, it's a good, in terms of stepping back on and reflecting on the chase, like looking at the format of this one and how it was, I wouldn't necessarily say groundbreaking, but it was definitely trying something different than their general TARDIS lands in, you know, time or space or alien planet and having adventure and then leaves at the end. Now, it's not like they hadn't done anything at all in that respect. I mean, arguably the Edge of Destruction, which was the third story, was not, they didn't even land. It's entirely in the TARDIS. So they haven't, you know, locked themselves necessarily into a single format. But if you look at virtually every adventure before this one, the TARDIS lands at the beginning and leaves at the end. Yeah. I actually have to think really hard if there were any exceptions to that rule. You know, I guess you could argue the Romans because it falls off a cliff is a little bit. This is the first time they're just in and out, in and out, in and out within the same story. So that's cool. And this necessitated, this doesn't really necessitate, but they took the opportunity to show the TARDIS in flight. So it's kind of, you know, they have these very sort of 60s-esque, you know, superimposed effects on a background with the police box and also the Daleks time machine, which I don't know whether to give you points or deduct points for calling it the TARDIS.
Yes, call that in the script, never in the show.
Yes, yes. So, but they show it, and so it's the first time you see it, which of course they would in subsequent years, and certainly in the New Who, you see the TARDIS flying all the time. Like, it's part of the credits now. Mm-hmm. And most of the time when you see the TARDIS in flight these days, it's spinning, right? Because that's the thing they started. God, I forget it. We've done the episode. Was it a Baker episode or
Pertwee? It was
episode?
A Pertwee. Yeah. I think, wasn't it Frontier in Space? When we first see the TARDIS spinning, something like that, or maybe it's the Mutants, somewhere around there. It's one of Pertwee's earlier space adventures when he's still actually stuck on Earth. But yeah, that's the first version of that effect. We're sort of getting the first glimmerings of the Time War here, and we're certainly getting the sense that it's almost like Doctor Who is trying too hard to show you what it could be.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it was, I mean, it, it's not like it was on the edge of cancellation or anything at this point. It was like hugely popular. Like, you know, 9 or 10 million people watched every episode of The Chase. The viewing figures didn't really go down. But it is also sort of like, it feels like it's stretching at the edges of what it wants to be. And it's not quite like a clip show or a very special episode, but it is. It's got the kind of thing that we would see again later in the Daleks' master plan, right? With the, we're just going to scurry into this location for this week, and, you know, we're going to have a madcap Christmas episode. Like, you know, obviously they did think that this was a template for it going forward, but my goodness.
Well, and also good parallel with the Daleks' master plan, because they both feature the Daleks, and they're both clearly, like, milking them as much as they can. This is the second, you know, Dalek adventure in season two, and it's, you know, they did the Dalek invasion of Earth, but this time out, it really feels like they're kind of drunk on their popularity a bit.
Yes.
And they're just like, let's just go all out. And they're also like early on still sort of figuring out what the limits are that they can push with the Daleks. So one of the things the Chase is known for, shall we say, and perhaps in some minds infamous for, is the humor and some of the not so great attempts at humor within the script. Now, to be clear, I think some of the humor works and some of it doesn't, but part of where it doesn't work is where they intentionally make the Daleks goofballs. There are some very clearly intended scenes where Daleks stammer out lines.
Yep.
Just kind of act goofy. Like, there's a bit where one Dalek is barking orders at another one in the second episode, I think, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that, and the other one's just replying, yes, yes, yes. And then the one that's barking orders starts to go away. It's like, well, go do it. You know?
Yep.
It's like this old style Laurel and Hardy type comedy that it just might work, might probably wouldn't even work with people.
The
Daleks are just like, what are you doing?
Like, it really does feel like they are almost deliberately, like Terry Nation is almost deliberately set out to destroy his creations here, like to tear them down. All of the scariness, it's like it's almost exactly mirrored and in a kind of a not scary way. For example, the iconic image of the Dalek coming out of the Thames from the Dalek Master Plan is not from Dalek Invasion of Earth. Yep. Is done here again with the Dalek coming out of the sand and coughing.
Yeah.
And coughing up sand. Like, it's almost an exact parody of that scene. But I'll tell you my favorite thing that the Daleks do in this that is just utterly ridiculous. It's like they just, this is the first time when they stand around, you know, barking exterminate at each other, right?
So, which right. First time they actually use it as a battle cry, as a standalone word. They say they're exterminating people in the Dalek invasion, but the actual, like, exterminate, just, this is the first time it happens.
But it's almost like they're throwing, like, every possible, it's like, you know, the Daleks are like, let's brainstorm what our word should be. Like, there are no bad ideas here. Come on, let's just throw it out. What you got? Annihilate? That's good. Let's say that 10 times. Like, they all copy each other. Like, you know, that's very much a Dalek thing. My favorite thing is at one point the Daleks in the Chase say, destroy and rejoice.
Yeah.
Destroy and rejoice. Now, destroy, I get that. Daleks, they like a bit of destruction. Rejoice? Now, do the Daleks like to have a party when they destroy things? Like, is this like Dalek Christmas? Is it Dalek New Year? What is the rejoicing? What does a Dalek rejoicing look like?
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny, like, not to read too much into it, but I like the line. First of all, their battle cry here is way better than, you know, the stuff that they meant. I forget exactly what they say in Destiny of the Daleks, but it's like, do not deviate. You know what I mean? You know, like, not just coming up with different words for exterminate, but there's seek, locate, exterminate. That was it.
Yes.
Kind of like, okay, come on. These Daleks better. It's like they start with align and advance and attack and destroy and rejoice. And it's like, right, I see your little, it's very linear, just like this story. It's a very, like,
it feels like they've been reading some Dalek self-help here. Like, you know, this is like the four Dalek agreements. You know,
well, I guess, like, you know, the one of the other knocks I'll give on Destiny of the Daleks is that's obviously we'd said at the time we've done that one where they get the Daleks wrong, that they're robots and have zero emotions. I think it's clear Daleks do have emotions. You know, they it's just their main emotions are centered around hatred of all other life forms. So what if they're killing something that's cause for celebration? You did some extermination. Good job. Let's go. Let's. And I don't know how they celebrate. It's mostly maybe the nodding of the eye stalks, which is another ridiculous moment.
They attach new hands. They trade in their plungers for like one of them's got like a gyroscope. Like, what the hell is that even doing? But yeah, it's a bit weird. And so is the overall structure. Let's talk about the overall structure of the chase. And it's sort of why it was hard to get into as a first time watcher, long time fan of the chase. I just the structure is okay. So there's a chase through time,
right.
And you can't. But it's timey-wimey. But you can't skip ahead. You can't like leap over. So even though it's in time, you can't like get there 5 minutes earlier. And
yeah, it's a bit linear. For
there's
sure.
like there's a whisper of the structure because the Doctor does say something like it takes the TARDIS computers 12 minutes once you land to figure out a new destination. Now that made me think of, do you know the Battlestar Galactica episode, like the first episode of 33? Mm-hmm. Yes,
totally.
Which was just so good. And it's like it's about the Cylons, like, you know, the fact that they are wearing the humans down because Cylons don't need to sleep, but humans do. And so if you just wear them down where they like have to jump every 33 minutes, then eventually they'll make a mistake. Now, if they did that in the chase, like we got to leave somewhere every 12 minutes, you know, and there's no time to rest. By the way, there is so much resting in this. Like, there's so much
nap on Mechanus.
They have a nap on Mechanus. They have a nap on Aridus. It's like, you know, Doctor Who pan-galactic napping in this story. And the Doctor and Bob nap together, which is kind of nice. It's kind of sweet.
Yeah, you got a point in terms of, like, you could do a darker episode and have it the tension higher. And you know that would probably be a better result. I don't disagree, but I also think if what they're going for here, to me, it's the equivalent of a summer blockbuster in 60s Doctor Who. You know, it's really just get your popcorn. You know, what does it make sense that they're chasing through time but not going in front ahead or behind or whatever? Not a lot. And you could argue maybe they did a little of that on Iridius, where the time space visualizer works. By the way, I do think the time space visualizer is a neat little device. Putting aside the complication that it's never seen again and the technology is never really used again unless you count sort of the Matrix of Gallifrey.
Yeah.
But as a device in this thing, it works really well. First, it gives them like the excuse to blow even more budget and hire even more actors to do even more scenes. Which, you know, again, like, okay, you got the money. Why not? Go ahead. Show us Lincoln. Show us Queen Elizabeth's court.
Yeah. Well, now, okay, let's deal with that because, you know,
visualizer. Mm-hmm. I like that that sets up the thing with the Daleks so that they could see them. And then all of that, it comes back around at the end with the them tuning into Ian and Barbara having a good time in
the 1960s.
It's just a nice little callback. So the way it's used here, and this is exactly, you know, what as it should be if you're an episodic show, which Doctor Who, you know, at the time kind of was and wasn't really that concerned with continuity. Yeah, who cares what the technology is? And if there's no reason he shouldn't use it in every adventure after, and then every mystery is solved instantly. It's like, well, who killed who? Let's just tune into the time space visualizer. Oh, that guy.
You know? I love the idea also that the Doctor is like, you know, we don't see this, but maybe it could be a webisode sometime that the Doctor is actually just like checking up on his old companions, like late nights alone in the TARDIS. He goes in the time space visualizer room, whacks it on the side a few times with a hammer because it is like a 60s television where huge thing, a tiny screen, and like you have to hit it a lot and it makes weird noises. I love that it's basically, you know, space television, but for the 60s. And just looking in on his old companions and weeping silently.
Oh. And
saying things like "Sarah Jane's gone." Can you believe that?
You see yeah. Smith in the dark room. Yeah.
Looking at the ponds. Yeah, you visualize them. All right.
So, do you want to talk about the Beatles scene?
Yes. So, let's talk about all of the places of the time space visualizer. Okay. First of all, Ian chooses the Gettysburg Address, mm-hmm. which is like, okay, but why? And then we get what appears to be a star turn from the animatronic Lincoln from Disneyland, which I knew there were robots somewhere in the chase. I'm like, is this a robot Lincoln? It really feels like a robot Lincoln. Like he's not doing a good reading.
Well, it's kind of doing a tease of the accents that were to come in the gunfight.
Or indeed a tease of Peter Purves' accent in this. I was kind of unspoiled on that, but
that
we'll get to that.
Better, I would say, but go on.
Okay. So then we get Queen Elizabeth I court and her berating Shakespeare for basing Falstaff on Sir John Oldcastle. Now, why would she do this? Because the essential piece of information they're not giving you, and I didn't discover until I looked this up, Sir John Oldcastle was in the 15th century. He died in like 1417. 200 years before Queen Elizabeth. So like, is she like, hey, that dude was one of my ancestors or something, like, you know, why did you base Falstaff on him? Like, no, she wouldn't do that. And then it's so like, maybe we've seen too much like Shakespeare in Love, like how did Shakespeare get his ideas? That's just not funny. But the whole thing of Sir Francis Bacon is there. And hey, he says you should do something based on Hamlet, Prince of Denmark. Jason was like, Hamlet, you say? Meaningfully, like it just reads it to our eyes where we've seen this like over and over. It doesn't read good. That's
certainly
a bit weird.
Not to the man in charge of the history corner. I didn't think you'd get this deep in the history corner in the chase. But
I did not think I was going to do any sort of history corner on that. Like I thought we were going to focus on Mary Celeste. We'll get there. We've got a tiny history corner on the Mary Celeste. Nothing of the size of the vast partition history corner. Just a teeny tiny one this time. But we'll get there. But let's talk about the Beatles.
Let's
talk about the Beatles because I wanted a Beatles. I wanted a Beatles bingo. We had the mention of the Beatles in the Three Doctors. Obviously, this is just a temporary Beatles bingo. We have it. It's temporary. We know now that they're coming up in Shooty's first season, which I'm super excited about. But yeah, this was an example where they could have had the Beatles on the show. Literally on the show. And the idea was that it was going to be the old Beatles. It was going to be the Beatles at a 50th anniversary concert. Now, 50th anniversary of what? We don't know. If it's like the Beatles becoming successful in the UK, that would be 2012. I'm going to say it like the first year everyone in the world had heard of the Beatles, 1963. That's the year we associate with it. And with Doctor Who. So,
And it's the only way Ian and Barbara could even know who they are.
Yeah.
Right. Like, because it's funny, like what's criticized here sometimes is that Ian's like singing along the Ticket to Ride, which hadn't even been released at the time. Although he's not really, right? Like if you actually look at the footage, he's just kind of mouthing it. And it's like,
he's dancing.
All you
like
have to
this.
Do is, well, you only need to hear the chorus once. Like, you know, it's a Beatles song. You can get into it pretty easily, pretty quickly.
Hold on there, John. She's got a ticket to ride and she don't care? Those looks are too complicated. Give it to me again.
Yeah. So I think all of that's fine. I have to say, like, thank God they didn't do the 50th anniversary thing.
I'm in the exact opposite end. I'm like, oh my God, they should have done that. And it was only their manager, Brian Epstein. Thanks, Brian. No, seriously, love you, Brian. Who said no? He said that didn't sound good. He didn't want old Beatles.
Then there would be, of course, I guess this would, you like the idea of there's a parallel timeline where the Beatles all live to be 50 years old. To 2012, I think.
Yes.
When did George Harrison die? I forget. Was that after
2001. 2001, okay, little did we know that on the 50th anniversary of the Beatles, there would only be two Beatles left. Sad to say, but yeah, and that's of course where we are now. Now, it is an idea that they would return to. If you've seen Yellow Submarine, you know that they did the whole sequence of When I'm 64 as growing old Beatles in animated form. I would have loved to see that in the show. And perhaps if they'd actually done this, Paul had already written When I'm 64. It was one of the first songs he ever wrote. It's just that it kind of ends up on the Sgt. Pepper album because they're kind of running out of stuff by then. So it goes back to the archives. Like, but maybe he would have pulled it out for this. Maybe Doctor Who could have debuted a new Beatles song. I mean, how extraordinary was that?
Well, it's still notable because they reused the footage from Top of the Pops. So that doesn't seem all that remarkable. The problem is, of course, virtually all the Top of the Pops recordings were wiped. So the footage that survives in the chase is some of the only footage from the Beatles on Top of the Pops. And it's so short. It's sad. Too bad Barbara turns it off.
Yeah. Square. Yeah. She doesn't like the classical music, as Vicky calls it.
Now, of course, the irony here is that the Beatles sequence is now cut from almost all of the official versions today. So I watched this on the Blu-ray, the new collection, and it's not there. And what they almost do it, like basically they talk about it's 1965, and I think you hear the first words from the announcer, but then they cut right to, oh, we're landing, let's go. And they run to the console room. In the BritBox version, you don't even get that.
Yeah.
The entire thing is just gone. Now, obviously, this is because of rights issues. I mean, you know, when they made this in 1965, who knew what digital distribution even would be? And there was nothing was in there about, like, you know, what home video or whatever. So if that's not specified, you don't have it. And they're not going to, you know, back up the money truck to whoever owns the rights now. It used to be like Michael Jackson's estate. I don't know who owns it now. But yeah.
Yeah. It's sad. I mean, if you're listening in the UK, don't worry. You've got it. Like, it's still in the UK version. If you got a UK DVD, it'll slip in there. Yeah, I believe it's on iPlayer. Yeah, because, of course, like, this is, you know, there's no way the BBC doesn't hold the rights to, like, Top of the Pops, you know, which that was a performance from.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, it's also the distribution, you know. So if you haven't specified that you also get digital distribution and do, anyway, it doesn't matter. I don't give them the right thing, but I can definitely see that being an issue.
Yeah, but nobody was even thinking of, like, America being a place that you would want to show Doctor Who at this point. Like, even though they go to America for the first time in the chase,
they did in Planet of the Giants.
Really?
That was America, wasn't it?
No. He's definitely they're English, I believe. It's like the English thug. Yeah. But anyway, it's a shame, but clearly they own the British rights. You know, nothing's going to take it away from that. What surprised me, having not seen this sequence before, was that the Doctor dances, which is kind of appropriate given that we are, you know, we've just seen Church on Ruby Road, you know, the Doctor sings and dances, and here he is dancing. Like, he's behind the time space visualizer, but you can see that he's bopping. Like, it's in the background, but he's like
fingers up. He's doing a little Matt Smith.
Yeah,
you know, dun, 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 dun.
He's doing a little of that. I love it. And then he makes a joke about Barbara. You've squashed my favorite Beatles. Yeah. And then Vicky says that she's been to, like, the Memorial Beatles Theatre in Liverpool, which first of all is wonderful because Maureen O'Brien is from Liverpool. Secondly, yeah, they haven't quite built a memorial theatre, but, like, everything else in Liverpool is now Beatles themed, like John Lennon Airport, and, you know, that you can go to the Cavern, you can go to the Beatles Museum, all of this stuff. But yeah, it sort of correctly predicts, like, that the Beatles would become big in our society. So good one, Doctor Who.
Yeah, good one, Doctor Who. So going from that to Iridius. That scene, all of it, like, really, that the bit in, even before the time space visualizer, during and after, when, you know, Ian's chasing Vicky, who just wants to go on her adventures, all that I think really works well. Like, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that makes the final scene where Ian and Barbara leave that much more sort of felt, because this is the really good sort of character building, we're becoming a family type stuff. Even the stuff where the Doctor's getting annoyed with Vicky, and she's being pretty annoying to everyone because she just wants attention because she's a kid. Like, this is the thing, she's written as like this 15-year-old or something. So She's wandered around. Barbara's doing something nice for her. This is, I think, something that didn't even quite make our cut of gifts. I forget if
it
or not in the gifts episode we did around Christmas. But she's getting ready to give Vicky a gift. She's making her a dress, which is super nice.
Which and, doesn't, like, she skips town without even giving her that gift. Thanks, Barbara.
Well, she spilled coffee all over it, so it's like, what are you going to do? But yeah, there's all this sort of family stuff. And I got to say, like, this is the kind of stuff that I think works well. Like, there's bad humor in The Chase, don't get me wrong. But there's good humor, too. And I think you don't let the bad stuff overshadow the good stuff. So that bit where they are sunning themselves on Aridius, and the doctor's singing, and there's the joke, no, not that awful noise, the other one.
Yes.
And I got to say, Jackie Hill delivers that really well. Grace laughed. I laughed. It's a good joke. And then they get some good mileage out of it with the doctor going like, oh, I could chain the nightingales out of the trees. Like, it's funny stuff.
I don't know if you thought as I did, having just been to A Christmas Carol, where Rory and Amy are playing dress up for a reason that may be clear to the adults, but not necessarily clear to the kids. There's the line about Barbara's cardigan, where Ian says, Barbara, give me your cardigan. And she says, oh, not again.
Well,
and he says, not for me, for the Daleks. And okay, what has been going on in the TARDIS?
Simmy down. It's a reference to the Space Museum.
Oh,
there's lots of cardigans being used for various plot purposes. So,
okay, does Ian wear one?
You'll have to see that one.
Okay. Actually, no spoilers.
I think it was more of a knitted one, so they needed some string to find something.
But it's certainly, you get the sense that Ian and Barbara are like totally a couple in this.
Oh, for sure. Well, especially that final scene when they're together and they're partying together. They don't go to their separate ways.
No.
And you see their families, who are never mentioned, but I mean, they're TV characters, so whatever, I guess. But especially when they get on the bus at the end after they've had tons of fun.
They're totally coupled up.
Yeah, she's leaning into him, and he's into it, and they're just the familiarity. Like, you know, they pushed as far as they could for a kids' TV show, I'd say, in 1965. Mm. And I will say, I'll just get another mention in here, because I'd like to mention it as many times as I can on Pull to Open. One of the best comics they ever did in Doctor Who magazine is something called Hunters of the Burning Stone. Mm. And if you were ever a Ian and Barbara shipper, which, let's face it, we all are, it comes to a nice fruition in that comic. It's really, really nice where they sort of end up. They get there happily ever after.
Yeah, you've mentioned that a few times, and I really need to go read it now. It's perhaps we can provide a link in the show notes of like how one can read that, because
if Amazon gives me an affiliate commission. It's good. So it's all good family building stuff. There is good humor. Now let's talk about some not so good humor. So there's a character called Morton Dill.
Yes.
Played by Ryan Peter Purvis.
I was so unspoiled on this that I did not know that Peter Purvis is in it twice.
Did you recognize him?
Not in the first 30 seconds, but then I'm like, hang on. I know that voice. I've watched enough Blue Peter. Like, that's, I recognize this guy. And also, like, it's got to be, okay, let's talk about the accent. He's supposed to be a dude from Alabama. What did you think of his accent?
Oh, no. Definitely not. No.
No, Peter Burns, no.
He's doing American hayseed is what he's doing. Yes. Generic American hayseed. It's not, again, this is BBC 1965. I wouldn't call it shoestring budget, but it is like you use what you can, and you probably don't have a lot of people who understand the subtleties of the American South and the difference in accents there. So, or even sort of something more general.
Yeah,
for the American South, I suppose.
So
it's not very good.
I feel like it kind of works. So first of all, we should say that there is kind of a trope of British actors defaulting to a bad Southern accent when they play American accents. And I often cringe when it happens. And it's something about, like, the British seem to think that if you do an American accent, you have to really do an American accent. You go so far into the American accent that you go into the Deep South. right? That tends to be, or you put a Texas twang on it or something. Like, that tends to be a thing. I kind of, like, I didn't get that cringe with Peter Perv's accent here. And it's perhaps it's because that he himself, like, he's just a nice guy and has that sort of genuine credulousness of a hayseed himself. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, it doesn't, I don't get the sense that he's mocking Morton.
Right. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you couldn't say like, oh, that guy's obviously from here or there based on the sound of the accent. But yeah, I definitely agree. He's not mean about it. It's not some, but get a load of this guy.
Yeah.
Kind of portrayal.
It's just more that he's so credulous that, and he's, but he's also like, ah, now I see how this trick is done. Like, he's trying to be smart. He's trying to think that he's seeing movies. And of course he's not, like, poor guy. Never seen a TARDIS before, to quote Mrs. Flood. Someone, Mrs. Flood, should pop in at that point, turn to camera. What's the matter, Mr. Dill? Never seen a TARDIS before. Or a Dardis. like a Dalek with a Anita Dobson wig.
I think he's a bit goofy. Some of the lines kind of work. I like when Vicky's the second one to walk out of the TARDIS, and he's already done the 1966 thing with Barbara, and he just goes, 1966. She's like, oh.
It's the same year.
That's actually good information.
Yeah. Well, okay, first of all, at this moment I kind of pictured the Drake meme where Drake is, you know, from Hotline Bling, and he's sort of turning away from a thing and then he's like pointing at the thing, like, no, yes. And the Drake meme here is New York 1966, no, London 1965, hey. Like, they could have gotten out of the TARDIS here and just gone home. Like, you know. They would have needed a bit of money to get across the Atlantic, but
you're kind of ditching the doctor on his, you deal with the Daleks, so you can't just do that. Come on.
But it would have been a nice thing to just sort of, you know, a little bit of a foreshadowing to be like, you know, to have one moment where Barbara's like, Ian, we're in 1966. We're so close. We're like, should we maybe? And then Ian's like, no, we have to, you know, we have to go with the doctor now.
Yeah. I wouldn't have hated it but I think they're so locked into like thinking we have to figure out some way, place to face the Daleks, that now what's everything else in the universe is almost like doesn't matter, sort of extraneous. Yeah. So yeah, no, I get it. It wouldn't have hated that. Now when they leave and then the Dalek time machine arrives and the Dalek comes out. So some people don't like this scene. I actually do like it. Like, even though it is a bit goofy, the humor here isn't let's make fun of the Daleks. The humor here is this guy's playing with fire and the Dalek is this close to killing him.
Yeah.
Just for the hell of it. And only because he has a bit of useful information does he survive, you know? And that I think is fine. That sort of, I guess it's a form of dramatic irony. But it's like, so I didn't mind that at all, even though like he's got the breakdown at the end is a little much. But
there's a wonderful moment where the Dalek loops around him and his eye stalk is following Morton Dill at all times. And it's like, I'm correct in saying that that's the only time that a Dalek has ever done that. Like, that's really
a 360,
a 360 with the eye stalk. And I love it. It's a comedy moment that really works for me.
It's kind of interesting in Dalek. This is one something I don't think we even mentioned in Dalek because it's so minor. But when Eggleston walks around the Dalek, it basically doesn't do the full 360. It follows him to about, you know, almost where it's facing behind itself. And then it actually goes the other way and comes back around. So it doesn't do the 360, which is, I'd be curious about that choice, because if it loops all the way around, I think there's a bit more of an emphasis that this is a machine. But if it's kind of like doing something that a human neck would do, you go as far as you can in one direction and then back the other way, that sort of humanizes it slightly. I would argue that's probably the choice that they made in Dalek. Here they make it go all the way around, which I don't know. It's maybe creepier because it's actually always looking at you.
Exactly. That was kind of both creepy and hilarious at the same time, which seems to be the sweet spot that Doctor Who's going for a lot of the time. Definitely gave me vibes of the Rasputin scene from Power of the Doctor, to mention the next story that Ian is in. So I like that bit. Like the episode 3, that was the first one that actually worked for me.
Interesting.
And then they go to the Mary Celeste.
That they do. And you didn't like that?
Well, it's a weird tonal shift because it's played as comedy. So the comedy is that the Daleks are like chasing the sailors around the ship going, stop, wait, we need to interrogate you.
chill out, everyone.
Hey, what is it? Am I scary or something? Why are you jumping away? Why are you running? I'm going to have to talk to my therapist about this. So it's a weird tonal because that's comedy. But at the same time, like, you see the captain's wife and child jumping to their deaths.
Well, I caught that this time, even though I've seen this several times. It was like that struck me for some reason harder this time. Like, wait, she's got a baby.
Yeah.
And she's just jumping in the ocean. Like, to die.
Hilarious. Nothing funnier than a baby doing a Jack and Titanic. Yes. Wow. Yeah. It's sort of weird. Okay. So, shall we talk about the real history of Mary Celeste? I promise I'm going to keep this one short.
Go.
All right. Would you like to introduce the segment?
5 seconds. Oh, wait. Okay. It's time for the Pull to Open History Corner.
There we go. We got to have the jingle. Okay, so the true story of the Mary Celeste, by the way, not Marie Celeste. That name was invented, that version of it was invented by Arthur Conan Doyle when he wrote anonymously a short story about it that sort of was the reason that everyone was so interested in this famously abandoned ship. So it is true. Like, they got the Captain Briggs, they got that correct. Mary Celeste had this whole weird history. It was this whole other ship. It was called the Amazon. It seemed to be cursed. Speaking of the curse of the black spot, we still don't know. We'll probably never know why the crew abandoned the ship. But the leading theory is that they were the crew probably were very scared of an explosion. Because the hold was full of alcohol and in wood casks. And, you know, they would in those days, when they're transporting alcohol, you kind of open the hold and you let the vapors come out. You aerate it, basically, so that it doesn't, you know, explode under pressure, because that was apparently a problem. Now, the way that things are abandoned, you know, they were sort of checking the bilge and all of this. Yeah, that's most likely option. They thought the alcohol was going to explode. They thought an explosion was imminent, so they sailed away because they were close to, I think, the Azores, close to the island of Santa Maria, and they thought they could make it in a rowing ship, and they almost certainly didn't. So they thought they were saving their lives. It's also possible that, like, there was a break in a storm. You know, they were away. Breaking a storm. Let's let this off gas, as it were, and then we'll come back to the ship. And then the storm kicks up again. They get separated from the ship, and probably drown then. So that's the leading.
Someone. Well, I guess that person might have died. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Well. Interesting. Turns out that it was the Daleks all along, and they all panicked. You know what I don't get? Why did that Dalek dive in the water?
Yes.
Every time I see this, there's a point where some Dalek just jumps in the water for no reason and seems to sort of scream.
Yeah.
And
it's purely like, okay, for getting to see a Dalek fall in water, because that's funny.
Because it sees everyone else jumping in the ocean, it thinks it has to too. And it's like, why does it immediately get destroyed? And then why don't the other Daleks care at all or even notice? Like, no one
would remark
that someone, you know, Dale the Dalek here just dove in. Oh my God. And like,
yeah, you need some other Daleks. You need other Daleks up on the deck going, why did you, are you rejoicing? Is that how we rejoice? Everybody in the pool, everybody in the pool. So it's kind of weird. And then, also weird is when in the next episode is the haunted house.
House of Horrors or House of Terrors, I forget what it is.
House of Horrors.
Yeah.
Which the Doctor to this day still does not know wasn't actually a funfair in Ghana.
Yeah. in Ghana, which was closed by Peking.
Yeah, so Peking rejected it. Ghana said, hey, come on in, spend your 10 American dollars on this amazing thing. And
well, it's 1996 when everyone's using the same currency, right?
Yes. I almost want a special edition where they're like promoting it as like, you know, 99 special, new for the Doctor Who TV movie, The Haunted House from the Chase. Yeah. Like, we get even more meta about it.
So I think the whole thing is a bit silly. I mean, clearly they're in some kind of Disney ride and they sort of portray it that way. So you think about this, like it might have landed much better in 1965 when, you know, things like Haunted Mansion were effectively brand new and not many people had experienced them. Now everyone knows what the shtick is here. I think it's there's an added silliness. Like, it's basically something that didn't age well. Mm-hmm. And but one of the things I do like is that arrogance of the Doctor of like, oh, we're caught in an area of human thought. And then he and Ian are almost celebrating. Well, the Daleks can never find us here. Yes. And then the next scene, there they are.
Oh, we've done. I was wrong. It does. It reads like a comedy sketch with all that good evening. I'm Count Dracula. Yeah. Like, oh, come on, dude. Like, we've seen this a thousand times. It also, Ian mentions the stairs as a good place to hide from the Dalek. This may be the earliest stairs joke.
Definitely is the first, yeah.
But also it doesn't make sense in the context of the story because they're looking for somewhere to make a stand with the Daleks. Right. So if the stairs are the place where, well, why not just choose a stair? By the way, I love that they choose a corridor. Instead, like, that's there. We're gonna make a stand in a corridor. This is perfect. Like, yes, and we can run down it.
The stairs joke is bad for a million reasons. I mean, one, it just undermines the Daleks further. Two, it's like, why not? If that's the secret, just go to what the Empire State Building would have been great. Just go down to floor 102 or whatever, right? Wherever you are, you know, and that's fine.
Yeah, and what's to stop the Daleks materializing at the top of the stairs anyway? Like, you know, so why even bring it up?
But then I do like that there's the flip of like we're somewhere they can't reach us, then they're right there. And then the Daleks are there. They come really close to actually getting them. But these funhouse creatures or the robots are there, which is kind of neat. And it's kind of like, it's fun to see the rest of Doctor Who contort to make these scenes make sense because the Daleks are blasting away at these robots, yet it's not having no effect. Mm-hmm. So the cool thing is, like, clearly this is the episode that sort of inadvertently, I think, establishes the Daleks will calibrate their weapons to what they're shooting at. Mm. So if they're shooting at organics or what they think are organics, they do something different than if they're shooting at robots, like the mechanoids later.
Yes.
So then they think they're shooting people, and so their guns aren't doing anything. You would think then, again, it would think, oh, maybe I should try a different setting or something like that. Instead, they just kind of haplessly stand there while Frankenstein picks up one of them and smashes it. And this is where I'll say, like, okay, the Daleks have lost one of theirs on Aridius. They've lost someone on the Mary Celeste. Now they lose someone at the fun fair. Like, the crew's doing a pretty good job about picking off the Daleks one by one just by just randomly landing in places. You could just keep doing that.
Do we ever get a number on, like, how many Daleks are in the TARDIS?
I think if you count them at the beginning, it's fewer than you actually end up seeing towards the end at on Mechanus. I mean, at least the implication. On Mechanus, there still seems to be at least a half dozen of them or so. But if they've lost three, I don't know. I'd have to do a count. I don't know if anyone's done that. But I think the implication is there's a whole bunch.
It really seems like one of them clown cars. Yes, sir.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, literally a clown car because they're so goofy and dumb. And just gonna we're going to arrive in 4 minutes.
Yes.
Okay.
So that episode was actually supposed to be in the mind. That was Terry Nation's original idea that what the Doctor posits is correct. But it was Verity Lambert who said, no, it must be rooted in a natural reality. So that's why.
Verity.
Yeah, I guess. And I guess now we have the answer to what feels like a schoolyard question that must have been asked over and over, like, who would win in a fight between Frankenstein's monster and the Daleks? Really does seem that's what we're going for. So that's a bit, and yeah, it's a bit weird that Frankenstein's monster can, a robot can pick up a Dalek and just go, oh, Hulk smash.
What are those carbon fiber Daleks, you know? So,
oh boy. Yeah.
That's funny. Like the Daleks time machine. Also, like there's this weird stuff with like some of the effects and the sound effects here. Where first the time machine looks like it doesn't have a floor.
Yeah.
And then there's bits where it materializes and doesn't make a noise, or the noise is sort of randomly in places. It just seems like there was definitely like a lot. There was a lot to do in this episode, and I think given how Doctor Who had just a punishing schedule at the time, you know, you couldn't make it perfect, but there's just so many little things to pick at, like even on Iridius, there's like, you can see the tarp in scenes by the trapdoor, and you know, less said about the Mire Beast the better.
There's a
and Frankenstein puts on like a coat at one point.
Yes, why for continuity, I don't know. But yeah, speaking of things to pick at, let's talk about the multi-doctor story known as The Death of Doctor Who, in which we discover that the 1960s, TVs were so bad that you literally couldn't, if someone just put on a William Hartnell wig, you'd be like, wait, is that guy the Doctor? What's going on? Now, this was the guy who stood in for him in Dalek Invasion of Earth. That's right, yeah?
I guess. It's some previous adventure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds right.
Yeah. Edmund Warwick was his name. And the thing is, he looks nothing like either William Hartnell, or even Richard Hurdnell, or David Bradley.
Yeah. Totally. It's this episode is known for its humor, a lot, mostly it's bad humor. This is like inadvertently bad humor, because you don't get the sense that Daleks are being like ironic when they say they've reached paramount success at duplicating the Doctor. Because I remember I was watching this with Grace, and she just looked at me like, is that supposed to be the Doctor? it's hilarious to watch the Daleks celebrating, like rejoicing at their amazing achievement of this incredible duplicate of the Doctor. Nothing like him.
Yeah. I'm going to say that maybe the Supreme Dalek has like needs corrective lenses. And none of the other Daleks are pointing it out because they're a bit scared of the Supreme Dalek.
Well, from a production standpoint, it makes no sense, because a lot of the scenes where you see the robot, it's not a double scene. It's not like both the Doctor and the robot are in the scene. You're only seeing the robot. So why not just have William Hartnell play the robot?
Yes.
What are you doing?
Let's say something nice about the death of Doctor Who and the battle between the robots, which is that you can, so if you squint at the chase, you can see that there's a story that perhaps they didn't intend, that's a bit more postmodern than they intended, in which it's all about Doctor Who. It's all about Doctor Who destroying itself, or the Daleks destroying the show called Doctor Who.
Because
we start off with they've basically given up adventuring in time and space. They're just going to watch television instead. Like, basically, the first episode is like Rick and Morty, you know, when they're doing their dimension TV. Like, it's basically that. Meanwhile, the Daleks have taken over. Like, they've got their own TARDIS. It's now a show about the Daleks. You know, they're the ones who are adventuring through time and space. And what you could say about the death of Doctor Who is that it brings us back to an unearthly child, or rather to 10,000 BC, where the Doctor is about to crush a caveman's head with a rock.
Well, he was considering it.
He wasn't
like poised on top of him with a rock.
And now here is Ian about to do the same thing to the Doctor, because he thinks it's the robot. But now, like, they recognize that the Doctor is not that person who would encourage you to drop a rock on someone's head. And maybe he was when Ian and Barbara joined the TARDIS, and now he's been humanized. So
is this the story that destroys Doctor Who or saves it?
Yes. Exactly. Well,
speaking of destroying things, man, do those mechanoids make some work out of some of the Daleks there. And well, they can immobilize them anyway, but holy cow.
That's that right.
Battle sequence, whatever you want to say about the mechanoids, the battle sequence with the Daleks is like amazing. I thought it was like really, really cool. I think it really holds up. I think the cuts they do are pretty inspired. There's like a bit where there's a zoom in or a close up of the Dalek eye stalk. Mm. And all of that works really well.
Yeah, suddenly the director who's been asleep for 5 episodes can actually put together a good sequence that isn't like, let's watch the Doctor and companions go to sleep for 5 minutes. Which is like earlier in the episode is what they do. Mechanoids.
And then they get saved. And I found that I'm a little split on the cliffhanger on episode 5, because you think the cliffhanger should be the Daleks are about to kill them and there's no escape from the cave. Yet they instead end it with the mechanoid, like saying, like, come on in. And it's like, oh, that's how they're being saved. And yes, there's sort of an unknown of where they're going. What's this? What's the new path? But wouldn't it make more sense that they're about to die? Isn't that the better cliffhanger?
Yeah, and when that mechanoids, the thing slides back. I mean, watching it in the order that we do, I'm like, ooh, it's a Croton.
Croton. The Crotons have like crystal head thing and like cleaner arms and stuff like that.
Isn't there something in the Crotons that is like that sort of like
what is it? The dinotrope? Tinotrope? Something like that?
Trope. Well, this is certainly a trope that we're seeing here. I kind of want, when you reveal the mechanoids, maybe this is an idea for the next Blu-ray, that you just have someone shouting in the background, make some noise!
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, first of all, we could talk a lot more about the mechanoids. I love talking about Doctor Who monsters, but there's a question that this thing brings up, and it's in addition to the 4 questions, which we should get to really quickly.
We should.
The question that it brings up is, okay, the Daleks have a time machine that's like the TARDIS. How come we never see that technology ever again?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I would argue this kind of time technology is explicitly not Dalek, given everything else we see. Because if you even think about Doomsday in the new series, there's the bit with the Genesis arc and all the Daleks come out of it. And you see the 10th Doctor going, Time Lord science. It's bigger on the inside. So it's like explicitly Time Lord science, not Dalek. So all of this is to say, like the big agreed upon retcon of this story is that the time ship was either stolen by the Daleks or supplied to the Daleks, ostensibly by the Master.
Yes. Or by the one who waits, whoever that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I like that. I mean, I like the idea that we're sort of seeing an early example of the Time War, but one that's this is the crap personal. Time War. it's personal.
Time War 2.
Time War 2. Two time, two war.
It's sequels out of order. This is the sequel to the Time War. It just came, you know,
yes,
50 years early.
Yeah, this is actually the Time War 3. Like, it's the really bad one. They've run out of ideas. Then we'll have Time War 2. It'll actually be the best in the series. Then we'll have Time War 1, which is like a bit low budget. I got another retcon for you. What if the whole thing is like they're in a galactic theme park the whole time and they don't realize it? And they're not actually traveling through time, they're traveling through different segments of the theme park, which is like very Westworld-ish.
And it's the Hunt the Daleks ride.
Yeah.
A Dalek chase ride or whatever it is. That's amazing. I love it.
Which is why it's so easy.
Almost like, did you read Liberation of the Daleks? It could be like one of those zones in that museum.
That's right. And because this is London 1965, you couldn't do the World Cup, but maybe you could do the World Cup qualifying matches. And hey, we're in 1966. Yeah, just take...
Oh, man. Wow. That's even better.
I love it. Wow.
All right, RTD, we've call answered us. A question we didn't even know was posed, but guys, there are other questions we need to answer, and those are, of course, the 4 questions to Doomsday. First question. Why did the randomizer take us here?
Wow. Well, okay. We've covered a lot of the reasons here. The temporary Beatles bingo. The fact that I'm wearing a Beatles-esque t-shirt with the Abbey Road cover, the one that Ellie Black was wearing. I loved it so much, I had to get it myself. So there's that. By the way, we should also mention 1965 was the year that John Lennon encountered a Dalek. At the Cannes Film Festival. Look it up. Nice. There are pictures. I've looked it up. It's incredible. Like,
is there pictures with John Lennon and a Dalek in the same shot?
Yes.
Wow.
A Dalek. He's like bothering John Lennon at breakfast. You've got Cynthia Lennon by his side going, oh God. And he's like,
It's a bit enough.
It's a bit naff, mate. So there's the Beatles connection. We're getting upcoming Beatles. You know, the randomizer wants to get us excited about that. Wanted to give me something light, but still wanted to torture me with the need for a history corner. and also, of course, the Time Meddler. Like, the randomizer has done this before, like doing stories out of order, but like very, very bunched up, right? So if you watch the Time Meddler along with us, and you're like, what's this about a panda? Like, what is going on here? Who is Hi-Fi? And, it seems appropriate to take the story backwards. So bring on the Space Museum.
Let's. Bring it on. I can't top any of that. I just think it wants us to start the year strong.
Yeah.
Go with that. Okay, moving on.
To chase through time and space.
Time for the second question, which is, what if the evil plot had succeeded? Okay, well, I mean, the evil plot is they're going to try to kill the Doctor and his companions. So if that happens, end of show. Roll credits.
Although they don't realize that the Doctor can regenerate at this point.
Yeah, that's probably true. Because they don't understand that the Doctor can change appearance until Power of the Daleks, of course.
Maybe they find a giant gun and they point it at him and he bigenerates into William Hartnell and Patrick Troughton.
Well, they'd have to do it right after he encountered the Celestial Toymaker. So, coming up quick in the continuity here.
It really is.
I guess you might ask the better question, maybe, well, when would it have succeeded in this adventure if they had done that? And it seems to me, if they just shot them a little bit sooner at the House of Horrors, that's the best opportunity.
Yeah.
Because I assume on Iridius, even though they're right there, you kind of assume the TARDIS is just in the way, that they can't get a clear line of sight on shooting them. So there's that.
I love the idea of like this could be a short story or a big finish or like an unbound, like an alternate timeline where it all starts with like the Ghana police doing an investigation. This guy who died, this ruckus at a fun fair, and there's this old guy who died, and what is going on here? The effects of this, let's say they do kill the Doctor, is there no Time War now, since there's no Genesis of the Daleks?
Whoever's the benefactor of their time machine, assuming this was some bargain that the Master concocted, that maybe it's like Frontier in Space 10 years early. And
or maybe this is the Master's first Dalek plan. But the Sasha Dewan Master, maybe this is how, like, was part of his plan to destroy Gallifrey. Because, get rid of the Daleks, then get rid of the Doctor, and then you can just ride roughshod over Gallifrey and probably destroy it before it's even aware of the Daleks' existence.
Oh, yeah. Not bad.
Yeah. So the Daleks destroy Gallifrey. They conquer all of time and space, completely unhindered, and then they rejoice.
It's just all rejoicing all the time.
That's right.
Davros had nothing to do with it.
Although he'll come in and claim credit, I'm sure.
Yeah, at some point. All right. Moving on to the third question, which is, where is the Clara Splinter? So I am pegging Clara this time as the chief programmer of that House of Horrors exhibit in Ghana in 1996.
Yes.
And she's basically making sure that Frankenstein robot just is a total loose cannon, just did some random programming, and it's going to go out of its way to you know, just screw things up with the visitors.
This is incredible. I had exactly the same thing. Right. Where's the Clara Splinter? She's running that funfair in Ghana in 1996 and specifically designed that Frankenstein's monster to be powerful enough to lift and smash a Dalek. However, now I've come up with the headcanon that this is all taking place in a theme park. I think that Clara is like running that theme park and making sure that nobody is aware that any of this is happening. She's also making sure that like everyone's perhaps a little bit drunk or has forgotten their glasses so that a robot of the doctor will actually look like the doctor.
Yeah. She's serving champagne at the entrance. It's all good.
Yeah. And that Hartnell design, like that feels like a Westworld moment of like, you know, she's berating some robot designer of like, what are you doing? This looks nothing like him. Like they're going to notice.
Let's give them some guava flavored champagne earlier.
Well, yes.
Hopefully they'll just be so drunk they won't notice. Yeah.
Yeah. What's up? What? There's a line where there's like MREs. They basically have TARDIS MREs. And Vicky hands one to Barbara, and she's like, "What flavor is it?" Vicky says, "Guava." Like, what?
I thought when I first heard that, I thought she'd say lava.
Gooey lava.
A little hot.
Okay. Coming in a little hot there.
It's time for the final question. The only question that matters for the chase. What did we think of this story? The Pulte Open Rating System has 6 ratings. There is the Dalek, which is what we give to a good episode of Doctor Who. The Ogron, which we give to a not-so-good episode of Doctor Who. The Professor Hader, we give to a not-so-great episode, but at least we learn something. The Viscount Banger, which we give to the best of the best. The Fixed Point in Time, which is something we give to a episode we can't rate. It's beyond rating, often for reasons of nostalgia. Or the Lady Cassandra, which is a paper-thin plot. But hey, it looks good, particularly with a little moisturizing. Mm. Where do you stand, Chris?
Well, first of all, let's do the how did we watch this, because I don't know if any listeners are wondering, but I did manage to continue to avoid BritBox and not pay for BritBox by discovering that you can download a colorized version of The Chase. Again, not a very good colorized one, but a colorized version nonetheless, and it's free at the Internet Archive. It's absolutely free. Mm. You can go watch it now, download it now, and you will see perhaps what I saw. Which is that each episode is so different, you almost have to rate them individually.
Oh, okay.
Which is so.
Sounds like so you, that might be what you have done.
It's what I've done, but I've got an overall rating. So,
okay.
Episode 1 is a hater, purely for the Beatles. If you take the Beatles out, if it's a Beatleless version, the American version, then it's a hater Ogron, I would say. Because at least they tried something new, which is what we say about the hater in the time-space visualizer. Episode 2, total Ogron for me. Nothing redeeming about that. Episode 3, half hater, half Dalek. Because I kind of at least had fun with episode 3. Episode 4 is a hater. Because again, they tried something. And I appreciate Terry Nation's idea that it was in all in the mind. Episode 5, hater Ogron. Because at least they tried something with the robot Doctor Who. And episode 6, kind of a solid Dalek for that fight with the mechanoids and Ian and Barbara's return, and the London 1965, which, by the way, Ian looks at a tax disc on a car which says December 1965. It could be December 1964, Ian. You're not excluding all possibilities. They might have got that tax disc and put it on immediately. Anyway.
I have already. That's what mine said.
There you go.
2024.
So first of all, never judge the year based on the license plate tax disc of a car. So that's a score of 3 haters, 1.5 Ogrons, 1.5 Daleks. And I think overall, I think this is a Professor Hater, because I think they tried a lot of new things, a lot of things that were very new to Doctor Who at the time. I don't think almost all of them didn't work, but hey, that's why we give the Professor Hater rating. That's why it's slightly better than Ogron, because at least they tried something, and the Chase definitely tried a lot of things.
Okay. Wow, it's impressive. Well, we're not going to... we might get a second page in the codex for the individual episodes, but that's on you, my friend. So
yeah, overall, right now, hater. Yep.
I have to go in on this one with a little history. So, like, this was always a favorite in my household growing up. So when I was a kid, The Chase was something we watched multiple times, and it's easy to see why. I mean, it's a fun summer blockbuster, sort of turn your brain off adventure. And I certainly will still defend The Chase. I think it is better than its reputation. I think it's really suffered a lot at the hands of Dr. Who fans who really don't like the things that don't work, which I admit, like the Dalek stuff being goofy. It's not good for the villains. And it undermines parts of the story and all that stuff. Yeah. All that's true. But it really, like, what you get out of this really depends on your expectations, I think, a lot. And if you're really there for a breezy, fun adventure with the Daleks, like, you could do a lot worse. So I think, like, Grace enjoyed it. She's 10 years old. Maybe that tells you something, but it is like, hey, you know, Doctor Who is a show for kids to a large extent. And if you have kids, I definitely would recommend watching this with them. It's fun, assuming they can get through the 60s production values. But I got to say, you know, there are big weaknesses in this story. I don't mind them so much. I can still watch this and get through it. It's probably just me. So this is exactly why we created the rating Fixed Point in Time. I can't rate this. I have too much nostalgia for it. I really, really enjoy it. I think parts of it are defensible, but I definitely understand where everyone comes through from when they criticize it. So it's a Fixed Point in Time for me.
Love it. That's it. Is this your first Fixed Point in Time?
No, it's my second. I did one recently. What was it again?
It was so fixed we can't even remember. Well, the Codex should know.
Yeah, we'll fire it up because we have to fire up the Codex in a minute. That's but before
right.
we do that, listener, go ahead and vote on Spotify your rating for The Chase. Is it a Dalek, Ogron, Professor Hayter, Viscount Banger, Fixed Point in Time, or Lady Cassandra? It is up to you. You can pick any one of those options in our poll, and we'll feature the results at a future podcast. But now it is time for Chris and I to enter our own time ship and activate the randomizer.
Indeed. So the randomizer, two components. First of all, the Codex, which Pete is at the controls of all the stories in the history of Doctor Who in sequential order. And I am at the controls of the Executor, played by random.org, which looks at the amount of atmospheric noise, because computers are bad at algorithms, Daleks are bad at algorithms, Frankenstein's monsters are bad at algorithms. Only atmospheric noise can give you true bespoke randomness. We enter into random.org the minimum and the maximum numbers, which is based on how many stories we have yet to do in the Doctor Who canon. Pete, what is the number?
That number, sir, is 198.
Wow, we've broken out of the 199.
Thank God they're not making more Doctor Who.
Thank God we've got a little bit of time to catch up. We're going to get down into the 190s.
We're starting to stack up a good chunk, though, at the end of the Codex, right?
Yeah.
The most recent story we've done officially is Legend of the Sea Devils. That's not counting reports or hot takes. So there's five whole stories stacked up at the very bottom of the Codex.
Yeah, it is now more likely that we will go to a story that includes Shuti Gatwa than that we will go to a story featuring Paul McGann. Sorry,
oh,
Paul.
My goodness. Yes, we have crossed that threshold. Sorry, Paul.
Sorry, Paul. Love you, Paul. We will thoroughly celebrate you whenever we get to the movie.
I guess you could count Power of the Doctor, though, so it's equal.
You're right. You're right. That is an appearance, and we sort of count Day of the Doctor because we sort of insert Night of the Doctor. Anyway, we're getting thoroughly nerdy with it. We like to get super nerdy and give the randomizers challenges. Give the randomizers, both of them, challenges. No, God, what am I even going to say? I've already said it. Take us to the Space Museum. I'm going to triple the answer to this one. Like, do this thing in reverse order. Like, let's find out how they got the time-space visualizer. Let's get another Hartnell off the books. And, show us the Space Museum. Or maybe another museum.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go for wintertime, which is to say we are just getting out of a non-white Christmas here in New Jersey. I long for some snow, and let's have something snow, cold, or winter themed.
Mm. I will also say, by the way, the Mary Celeste, in the course of researching that, I discovered it, the last stop that the Mary Celeste made before it set off on its fateful adventure was in Staten Island. As if they didn't suffer enough. Sorry, Staten Island. But if there is a Doctor Who story that features that mentions Staten Island, or is tangentially related to Staten Island, let's go there. Let's see.
I don't even know if there's been a non-canonical adventure, like a novel or a short story that's been had anything to do with Staten Island.
The Daleks take Staten Island. The Angels take Staten Island. Yeah, yeah. No, it's really just been left to what we do in the shadows to represent.
All right, are you ready for the countdown?
Ready for it. Let's do it.
4, 3, 2, 1.
No, not the mind probe.
41. We're still in classic Who.
We are at...
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
Death to the Daleks.
Oh, my God.
We're just... hoovering up more Daleks. There's no winter in this one, so I'm out.
Yeah, there's no Staten Island, so far as I know, and there's no museums in Death to the Daleks. But this is Pertwee?
Definitely Pertwee.
Definitely Pertwee.
Last Dalek adventure.
Ah, so we did do them in order with sure. Day of the Daleks, which we went to really recently. But yes, after having
we're not
seen...
not doing them in order because there's Planet of the Daleks.
Of course. Okay.
More Daleks. Well, we are just rapid-firing through the Dalek stories here at the beginning of Season 5 of Full to Open, dear listener and folks. Wow. If you want to follow the podcast, we are at on social media. We didn't mention it earlier, but we are at Pull to Open 63 on most networks, except for TikTok. We are Pull to Open, as well as Blue Sky. We are at Pull to Open. Man, just Google us. That's where we are. We're
Google
also
it.
At pulltoopen.net, where you can subscribe to our newsletter for full notes on this episode, which will contain quite a few tidbits that we probably didn't get to. And yes, again, please leave a review, leave a rating in Spotify for the show that we just reviewed. So do that, but also leave a rating for Pull to Open because we like that. And we will see you around next time for some more Dalek action.
That's right. We'll see you on the paradise planet Florana for some Dalek death.
All right, dematerializing. See you, folks.